This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 14th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a postseason Sunday night is my buddy Jin Allen. What's happening, dude?
I'm off on Sunday. That's kind of what's happening, which was cool because it was cool because I got to watch baseball today. I wasn't able to watch the opening of the Climax series, which was a major drag.
So, yes, people ask me what I do on my off days, and I say, watch baseball. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, I was watching volleyball for 2 days, which is not bad. I really enjoyed it, actually. So it was different. It was fun, but it was not. The hardest parts of the baseball season for me are opening day and the end of the regular season, because it's data panic time.
Data opening crunch day, for you, yeah.
Oh, because opening day means you got to have all the rosters ready. Okay, and you got to make sure your data is gonna be able to
process. Correct.
Yeah, process, exactly. So I have that. And then season ending, I've got these like a zillion, not quite a zillion. It's about one half a zillion.
A bazillion, yes.
Yeah, Brazilian, yeah. So that was the joke about the four Brazilians killed in Iraq. And this is, I don't think there were that many. So,
But I'm bunk.
Exactly. So anyway, so there's a whole mess of files to sort out my data analysis, my evaluation of all the different players' seasons. And it takes a lot of number crunching and making, how come these database files aren't merging properly? And anyway.
Well, you like numbers, so it sounds fun for you, but not for me.
No.
Yes, you do.
I rely on numbers because my memory is really bad.
All right. Well,
that's why computers were invented, because of my memory.
Well, let's remember to stay on time here tonight. So we've got a good show for you tonight. And we're taping tonight, but this show will drop in the morning, probably Monday morning. And that's before a day game. But anyway, on this week's show, we've got Carter Stewart Jr. of the SoftBank Hawks. We look at the playoffs, the first round. We look at the musical managers and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
So how awesome it was to get some more time with Carter Stewart Jr. I like to call him CSJ. And he's coming off his best season, obviously. I won't call it a breakout season per se, because I think we'll see a breakout season from him in the future. I think we'll have a really good season, and people will say, okay, this is
like
the guy.
It's like his second straight breakout season, because last year was a huge jump forward and this year was another huge jump forward. So, yeah.
And I'm expecting more. And we've seen him develop from being a teenager to a young man here. He came and he was on the show immediately. I think before he even pitched on the top team, we did an interview with him. So we have really enjoyed talking with him, really appreciated his time over the years. And he's showing the ability to pitch now, not just throw. And it has really been a wonderful journey with him, so far as we watch, you and I, him grow and push his career forward like this. So we're honored that he spent some time with us. This was double barreled action. I made sure to ask Jim if he could sit in and we could do this together. And that was another thrill, because the first time we interviewed Carter Stewart, we did it together. So not that this is the last time or anything, but this was another opportunity for Jim and me to sit down with him and do a Zoom chat. So let's take a listen. All right, joining us on the program again is Carter Stewart Jr. I like to call him CSJ. Thanks so much for coming back and being with us, even on a day off and over Zoom here. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Any way I can get on, I'm always willing and wanting to join you guys and have a nice conversation. So, as always, appreciate you guys having me on as well.
All right.
Did you actually have a day off today?
Today was a very short practice followed by a surprise birthday party for our manager, like a surprise birthday party, which was him having a cake and just telling the story about how, in his retirement game, I don't know if you guys noticed, but his retirement game, he got no hit by, I don't remember what team it was, But their team got no hit.
When was this? Did he tell you what year?
Jim would know. 2010.
When he retired.
Yeah, he retired. Oh, hold on. 2011. He retired when they changed the ball.
And
a lot of people's numbers, offensive players' numbers, went in the tank. And then when they changed it back 2 years ago, he said, "Can I unretire?"
Yeah, but it was a quick little easy day. But yeah, it was followed by him telling us a story about that story.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into it. This has been, I think, a challenging season across MPB, but your team had its share of injuries and issues and lost guys. But you kind of had a breakout year in terms of results and numbers and stuff. So how do you feel like you fared over the season if you reflect on the regular season?
I feel like I did pretty well overall. I felt like, it was a big year for growth for me in terms of like my poise and my mental capabilities on the mound and just my overall, obviously pitch ability. That as each year goes on, I want to improve that. I feel like I did well. I feel like there's some stuff that I really wanted to do better. Still walk too many guys. I mean, that's always an issue for me, but it went down a little bit this year, which is always a positive. I want to see that, those improvements. That was kind of the main thing for me is keep the walks down. Obviously, I gave us a bunch of chances to win. The team, we had a lot of offensive capabilities this year. I got a lot of run support, so I can't complain on that front. That's the main point. That's the main thing is just walks.
Do you have a game in particular that you would say was your best this season that you remember?
I would say that the start in Sapporo versus the Fighters where I struck out 13. That was that was my and probably like if someone looks at it, that's probably his best this year. It was either that one or it was the start I had in Chiba, and I've had a lot of struggles against Chiba over the last 2 years. And I went to their place. It was like a windy, rainy day.
I remember that.
It was terrible. And I went 7 when giving up 1 and had a big 7th inning, or they were putting some pressure on me. And I was like, that was one because it was late in the year. I was tired. I think they were in second place still. And to go to their place and put up a good start against them, I was really proud of that one because, Chiba's a hostile environment. As you guys know, that place is insane.
Yes. And the site of your playoff experience last year. Yes.
Yes. But I was really happy with that one. And that kind of gave me some confidence at that stadium and against the Marines overall.
Good. Now, I want to ask about the walks a little bit, because I noticed the first thing that struck me this year was when you started getting starts and working into the rotation, you were walking very few.
Mm-hmm.
Were the batters making adjustments to you afterwards that led to more walks or?
I think so. I think it was a multitude of things. I think that a little earlier in the year, I was maybe, I don't know if lucky would be the right word. Maybe I was just, I was throwing a little bit more strikes. I was getting a few less starts. So I think I was a little bit more rested and just overall in better condition for the starts. Mm-hmm. I was throwing about every 10 to 14 days towards the beginning of the year. Right. And as the season went on, I think that there was just more spots like later in the year, especially facing like the fight. I faced the Fighters and the Marines, like, I want to say it was like 5 or 6 starts in a row, which they're the better offenses, where I had a couple of points during those games where I just got in situations where it was like, man on second, 2 outs, they're 4 or 5 old guy up. And I just was like, why throw him a bunch of strikes? Or, why try just throw him, fastballs down the middle, be a little bit more perfect. And I think I walked a few guys that way. But overall, like you said, just as the year went on, maybe I was just a little bit more fatigued. There's here and there, I have a big problem with walking guys, first guys of the innings, like from no outs. And I think that's just something that I need to get a little bit better at, be a little bit more focused from first pitch. And I think that also is a big factor.
Yeah, I noticed. I did notice that when you talk about the fatigue. In fact, that game in Chiba, I'd watched a couple of your starts and I thought, well, they're sticking with him. It's a 6th inning and he looks a little gassed.
Yeah.
But good job in Chiba, because that was one of those games where it looked like you'd already reached the end and they kept you out there. I was quite surprised.
Yeah, that start in Chiba, and there was one start in Seiba, which Seiba is always, a million degrees. But that start in Chiba was like awfully hot. Like, it was so humid. It felt like 1,000 degrees. And I got to the first inning and I was like barely able to breathe. I was like, oh God, guys, like, you know, give me some air, give me some oxygen in there. But I got through those first three innings and kind of settled in. I didn't have my A stuff that day. But once I got, like, you know, my feet under me, once I got my breath back, then I was able to kind of like lock it in.
All right. So, how do you think you pitch? I mean, I'm looking at your numbers here against the Fighters and the Marines, 5 starts against the Fighters, 4 against the Marines, mm-hmm. About, I guess, 4-3 overall mm-hmm. against both of them combined. How do you feel like you pitched against those two teams? Because obviously you're going to see one of them in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah. I think early on, my first 2 starts against the Fighters were, you know, probably 2 of my better starts of the year. And the Marines, I feel like I threw well against the Marines every start this year, except I had one in Kitakyushu, which is that local field near here, where mm-hmm. it's like about 290 to center. It is very small.
Pop fly homers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Where I gave up, like, I got bases loaded in the second, and I gave up a bases loaded double to Oka that went, I swear, it went like 260 feet. Like, I was like, dude, are you kidding me?
When he was hot, right?
Yeah, he was swinging it. I actually, I got a win that day. I went like 5 and gave up 3. I remember Ojima went out there and went like 3 and gave up like 7 against us. It was just one of those days. But against the two teams, I feel like I did very well. My last start against the Fighters, I want to say about 3 weeks ago, I didn't have my A stuff. We kind of knew at that point we're going to clinch. We knew at that point we're most likely going to clinch. And we went into that game and me and my catcher sat down. We're like, hey, like, let's do some fun stuff today. Let's try some stuff. Let's really establish a different style of pitching. And I went in there and did that pretty well. Kind of got back, you know, they got to me in the 6th. I gave up a 2 spot in the 6th. But
I remember that. Yeah. Late in the game. Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, between the two, I wouldn't pick one or the other to say that I want to pitch against.
Oh, no, you never asked that.
Yeah, of course. but I am excited to, you know, face one of those teams in the playoffs, considering they're both, I mean, Fighters are a good young team with, you know, a lot of talent, and the Marines are just kind of one of those teams that just are consistent every day in, day out, and they, you know, put a pretty good lineup out there every day.
Right. Yeah, they present different problems, too. They're completely different kinds of lineups and the style and approach, and you've got a manager and Tsuyoshi Shinjo with the Fighters, he'll do anything at any moment.
mm-hmm. No,
and,
I mean,
and a more conservative manager with the Marines, but a group of guys who seem like they put a good at bat every time they go up there. They know what to look for. They I wouldn't say they sit on pitches per se, but mm-hmm. they when they get pitches they're expecting, they certainly put good swings on those as well. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I learned. I feel like facing the Marines is one of those teams that I learned the most about pitching and about baseball from, just simply because, like, you know, they got some older guys in the lineup. Like, I mean,
Oka's one of them.
Yeah, Oka one, Ogino, who I faced a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sato's good. Obviously, Polanco and Soto are good sticks. And they obviously have a lot of crafty guys in their lineup. And just like, definitely a team that, you know, from my first start against them last year until now, I feel like I've learned just the most about pitching and the most about, like, you know, what you have to do some days to get guys out. And that's a fun thing for me, you know, looking back on the regular season.
Right. Now, one of the things, of course, and I'm sure we've talked about it before, are these guys who are just trying to make contact. Mm-hmm. And what have you learned about getting those guys out who are willing to foul off 20 pitches?
Mm-hmm. Or 30.
Yeah. Or 30. Yeah, they can.
You know, back on the Marines lineup, my first start at their place, I faced their 7, 8, 9, their first time through the order, I believe had something like 20 something pitches against me. I believe they had 3 at bats against me that day. And it was like 70% of my pitch totals to those three guys. And it was, I don't remember their names. It was like their shortstop, the small lefty who had like a 9 or 10 pitch at bat against me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just like, you can't do a whole lot. You just have to go in there and be like, all right, I know this guy's going to put up a good fight. Sometimes he's going to get himself out on one pitch. You know, sometimes he's going to slap a single against you. Generally speaking, they're not going to do a ton of damage. Mm. But also they're going to, you know, annoy you. Like, they're going to get in your head. And honestly, it's a mental game at that point. It was just staying in the game, you know, making it one pitch at a time until they're going to get themselves out most likely, especially if you're ahead, if you're 0-2, 1-2. Those guys are, it's really hard. I mean, anybody in the league, 0-2-1-2, it's very hard for them to get on. But especially those guys, they're most likely going to do very little damage against you, especially if you get ahead.
Right. I did. As soon as you said that, I'm looking at my tables here. And yeah, a lot. It's like they're just like fouling off your fastball.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 107 right-handers fouled off your fastball 107 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
Probably all seems like it happened in one game against Lotte, but
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, but it's just a mental game, and I'm going to face them. And you know, the Fighters and Chiba both have those guys in their lineup, and you know, I'm going to see them again, especially in the bigger environment. You've got to throw those guys strike. You can't walk them. You can't get behind on them.
Right. And the I guess related question is, now that you talk, I mean, you're meeting all these guys who've got experience in MLB and now in Japan.
Mm.
What have you learned about the differences from talking with these guys? I'm curious to know. You ever ask anybody, how is this different from how it plays in America?
Yeah. Would you say like pitchers or hitters? Because I kind of have
either way.
Yeah. Pitchers wise, I met Keuchel a couple weeks after he came here, and I had a nice long chat with him. Just like we met at their place. It was actually after that start there. I talked to him. I was like, hey man, like what do you think of, you know, like of Japan and these guys? I think it was after he made two starts. It was the first start he made at the PayPay Dome, mm-hmm. Where he gave up like two or three in the first, and then he kind of settled in. He's like, he kind of noticed that, like you guys are talking about, is a lot of these guys are putting up quality ABs every single time. They're not just, a lot of these guys aren't getting themselves out, fouling off a lot of pitches. And if they, you know, if you hang something, they're generally going to put a good swing on it. And like, he's saying that versus some of the guys he saw in the States, you know, they have bigger holes, they have more consistent holes, compared to the guys here have, their holes are generally smaller, but they're not going to do quite as much damage as, you know, some of those big free swingers. And hitters wise, I haven't had a ton of chances to talk to hitters. But like, I do see some, you know, I've seen Polanco and Soto and, you know, Reyes and Martinez and, you know, seeing someone like, let's just say like Reyes, he's swinging it hot right now. He's just a different approach. I have to approach him differently than I have to face, you know, a lot of their lineup, in the sense that, you know, he can do more damage. Mm-hmm. But he, like I said, he has, I feel like, more holes in his swing because he can't do that damage, right?
Right. Okay, thanks. Wow.
All right, well, this will be the last question for me, and I'd love to talk to you all night and do a whole show with you, but we won't keep you. But I always hear, I've often heard that phrase, stats are for losers, and each year in NPB, we see teams bending over backwards to get guys some special number. So in mm-hmm. your case, how much talk was there to get you a sub-2 ERA and to get that 10th win for you, because that would have been a big deal for you?
10 wins was a huge talking point. I think it's kind of funny, personally. It's like, over here, 10 wins is kind of like the mark of a success for a season, I feel like, as a pitcher, as a starter. I wanted to get there. I mean, it's a kind of a cool, you know, milestone. I can say I did it. Personally, I didn't really care that much, which I don't know if that's good or bad to say, but I just wanted
I don't care about stats.
I just wanted to go out there and, you know, just put up quality starts. But once I got to like 6 or 7, I was like, all right, you know, if I throw a few more quality in there, you know, we put up some runs, it'd be cool to get that 10th. Because during spring training, for, I want to say it was my third and fourth year, when I was with the second team, they always made us do these speeches in Japanese. And it was like, hey, go for the foreigners, go out there. It was like when, you know, the young Hispanic kids were here, I was here. Like, just go out there and say something. Like, we don't care what it is. Like, well, just anything that's like somewhat related to baseball, and you did good. I believe both years I said like, yeah, I want to get 10 wins in the big leagues. And then it was like, you know, this year came around and I was at like 8 or 9. They're like, oh, and all, when every time I went to the minor league facility for practices, mm-hmm. All like the minor league coaches and the guys that have like been around me for a few years, they're like, not like, they're like 8. And then like, I got one more, they're like, oh, 9. And I was like, sorry guys, like I'm done. They told me I'm done for the year. And they're like, oh man. But it was cool. The sub-2, I don't think anybody really cared that much because I didn't have a qualified season. I mean, it's cool. Yeah, obviously you see that in the yearly stats, you know, sub-2, it looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like I could have even done better, which is crazy to say, but there was definitely some spots in there where I know I feel like I made some less than quality pitches and gave up some runs that I shouldn't have. But when it comes down to it, sub two is going to play anywhere in the entire world. Someone, everyone will take that, right?
Sure will. Okay. Sure will. Okay. Yeah, I would say the stats are for losers, because when I played basketball, yeah, I went out for our final game and our team was like 1-8 or something, and we had a chance to go 2-8 or 1-9. But I, you know, they said you got to score 30 points, John, so you can make sure your average is over 30. And I'm like, man, you know, we're 1-9, man, or 1-8. I mean, who cares? You know, yeah. So I've always hated that, the notion of playing just to get to some numbers that when you're losing. You're losing.
Yeah, exactly. But also on the other side of it, it's, you know, we spent a whole year, you know, we spent 143 games. You know,
we'll come and quiz you next year again.
I always say 42 or 44 for some reason. But you know, seeing that, you know, at the end of the year, all your work put together into some nice numbers looks kind of nice, and it kind of somewhat decently portrays how you did that year. Sometimes not great, sometimes really well.
Okay.
Yeah, that brings up a whole bunch of next questions I'll have to save for next year maybe, or the Japan series. So the last one is, I want to talk about your pitches. And now, from personally, I think that your command and confidence with the splitter was just was the big difference this year. Mm-hmm. And your curveball really came back. I mean,
oh yeah,
I was watching that puppy and they're going like, oh man, don't do that to me.
Yeah.
So yeah. Was that an accurate description of your?
100%. You know, when I got drafted back in 18, they were like, oh, this guy's got a nice curveball. You know, he's got a nasty one. It's like, that's nice in Japan, but that's not a strikeout pitch here. It just never will be. Even like the guys with the best. The only guy I've ever met in Japan who was a strikeout curveball is Ishikawa. And it's still like kind of, you know, here and there. It's like, it depends. But, you know, in Japan, the split is a strikeout pitch. And from here, you know, I put the work in. I try to learn it for 4 or 5 years. And last year, I kind of got through with it. It was just a confidence thing more than like a intent or anything else. And then this year, from start one, just throwing it consistently and throwing it off my fastball just made life significantly easier. And then landing that, like you said, landing that first pitch curveball, second pitch curveball for strikes. And then it's like, oh God, you know, what is he going to throw? And then you throw something hard with some, you know, late break. And it's like, that's where that, you know, the strikeouts come from. That's where the confidence come from. And then, you know, I got a lot of good swing and misses on pitches out of the zone this year, which I wasn't doing very well last year. And I think that was kind of the difference maker for me, is like, I don't have to just throw, you know, 0-2, 1-2, be perfect, or throw it in zone. Like, I can kind of, you know, work different things.
Okay. And I have to ask, while I remember this, the last start against the Fighters in Hokkaido. Sorry, John's going nuts. He's used to this.
Oh, that doesn't mean anything. You're over.
So I was watching that game and I was watching the umpire. I'm going like, dude, that's a strike. And the umpire's going like, you know, if it was a guy who always threw strikes, it would be a strike, but not for this kid. And then you didn't get one. You didn't get a borderline strike until they called one on Ariel Martinez. And I'm thinking, that's the game.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember that pitch. And after I struck, or no, I think I had him like fly out to center or something.
Yeah.
Either it was, and I kind of went by him after, and I looked down and I was like, inside. He's like, yeah. I was like, that's a little bit in. But I mean, he was inconsistent all day. And then, I mean, it's just baseball. I'm not going to blame it on anything, but.
It's a tough job.
Yeah. The start I made against him, the first start I made in Sapporo this year, I felt like the guy gave me a few pitches. Okay. So they just had to make up for it, right?
I suppose.
There's always a balance. Yeah, there's a bank. There's a bank. All right, okay. Carter, thank you so much. Good luck in the playoffs. Hope to see you late in the playoffs, make a really strong run, and help your manager celebrate that birthday even more, even longer.
Yeah, of course. No, yeah, thank you. And I appreciate you guys having me.
Okay, well, thanks much. And we'll hopefully talk to you in the Japan series.
All right, sounds good. Hopefully.
All right. So he didn't care about those 10 W's, but a lot of people around him were worried about it and giving him the wink and the high sign and all that stuff. But What did you enjoy most about this interview, if I use the word enjoy here?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's always fun. Carter is a unique individual, and he's very mature for his age. And I remember a couple of comments I'll let you hear that between December, when I heard he was getting a 2-year contract extension through the 2026 season, that one of the comments I heard last winter was good, because that was an MLB professional scout, the head of professional scouting for one of the 30 MLB teams. He says it'll be perfect. He'll be like 26 or 27, and it'll be a top quality star ready to be an international free agent, just ripe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's going to be great. So people are looking forward to that overseas. And another source who was not happy with the contract extension, it's like, what has he done? What is
enjoying
he
life? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, he's earning it now. I mean, and everything would have gone so much better in his career. And then we didn't get the other question I had for Carter was, how hard is it not to keep up with the Japanese guys in terms of fitness preparation? Because he threw out his 2022 season by tearing in his abdominal muscles, trying to do stuff he shouldn't have been doing. And now he's preaching, you know, we talked about that in January.
Okay.
So yeah, I wanted to ask that question. We didn't quite get to it, but I noticed, you know, as I said that I noticed second half of the season, he was laboring later in the innings. It just looked like he was really gassed in the heat.
Sure.
Of course, everybody is, but I was wondering about that and what's he doing, you know, to be stronger in that respect. But we didn't get to it. We'll get to it. And he'll be here. He's here for another 2 years plus. So
what are you talking about? You'll be able to get to it in the Japan series. You're going to go probably, right?
I'm probably going to go.
If the Hawks are in it, you might get another chance then. So don't sweat that. Yeah, I love that, you know, that he wasn't really concerned about getting that 10th win. And not only was he not concerned, it sounded like he really didn't give a flying bleepity bleep, because he and I, we seem to think on the same things. What is a 10 is just a number, right? It doesn't do anything. It might change things for my contract down the road or something, or what they're going to pay me, but I still have value whether they give me that money for it or not. I still value myself and my work ethic, and who cares about the 10th win? And that stuff looks great during contract negotiations, but guys want to win. So if you're out there and you have 10 wins, maybe your teammates or the opposition going to be out there saying, hey, let's go 10 win, you know. It just doesn't do anything.
I always wondered about, and this is, I'll try to keep this tangent short.
Oh, ha, ha, he says joking.
Hashtag.
Yeah, that was joke number one for tonight. Funny guy. Okay. I've always been intrigued by the idea about how in Japan, it's all about the team and it's all about the team. But all about the team means let's get this guy 10 wins. Let's, you know, who's our MVP? The MVP is a big deal, you know, but it's all about the team. Oh, shut up. Shut up about that all about the team stuff.
Yeah.
And the secret, and I guess blog readers have heard me say this, the secret is that the individual results, the individual accomplishments, are considered to accrue to the team. We got this guy here. That's why that's why in Japan you see these really silly things like intentional. Well, I mean, the most famous case was Kazuo Matsui and Makoto Kosaka buying for the Pacific League stolen base title. I think it was in 1999. And they were playing each other in the last game of the season, and the Cebu Lions threw an intentional wild pitch to keep Kosaka. He was on first base and he threw an intentional wild pitch so he'd go to second without stealing it. Because they wanted the team to have a player who won the stolen base title. Cause it's a team in that sense, it's a team accomplishment. So there's right. that. Anyway, so that's the one thing. So I think that's part of the dynamic of everybody wants him to get 10 wins because it's a thing for us.
Yeah, and I understand that. And then the teams back in the States, they say the same thing. Guys win an MVP and they say, well, this is a team award. I've heard it all. But
they say it.
You don't, and they mean it, and it's true. I'm not doubting yeah, it at all.
Okay.
Everybody has to contribute to everything, and maybe you contributed a little bit more, and your numbers look better. But some guys like to start thinking that it's more them than it is the team, and that's a bad thing. And then sometimes the team starts to think, hey, this guy doesn't appreciate us enough. We're the ones who are really helping him. So, I mean, it goes both ways. I understand that, and that's the way I phrased the question when I asked him about, you know, guys trying to get an extra at bat here or an extra start here. The team starts a starting pitcher in a meaningless last game of the season so he can try to get that extra win to lead the league in wins or whatever, however they do it.
Do you remember the Fighters pitcher? I want to say Kanemura, and I want to say Satoru Kanemura, who had a meltdown when Trey Hillman
yes.
took him out of the last game of the season.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't know
because he wanted 10 wins. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, wow. I mean, it happens. And I understand that it's a big thing in contract negotiations, and guys want that, and that's cool. But, you know, money, what can you do with the money that you get from your contract negotiation? You can't buy a championship with it. So in that sense, CSJ and I are on the same page. I don't really care. Let's just win.
You booked a spot for your MasterCard commercial.
All right. Well, but we really enjoyed, we're going to move on from this, but I really enjoyed talking to him. It was a great interview, 20 yep. minutes of CSJ and Jim and me, just really fun session right there. And even if Jim is pushing it into overtime with an extra question and say, did you have that other question prepared? Because you don't usually
prepare questions. Sure, of course I did.
Wow, look at you. You don't usually prepare questions. What happened? What got into you? Look at the face. I'm getting a scrunchy face from Jim.
Well, usually that's old Jim stuff.
I gotcha. All right. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the game. So we're going to start in the Pacific League, even though that's the one Pacific League Climax Series that has not been decided as we sit here tonight. But it will be about 24 hours from now because the game mm-hmm. is it's a day game tomorrow. Starts at 2:00 in Japan. So we'll drop this in the morning. Hopefully you guys can listen to it before the game starts. but we almost had it, Jim. I think it has only happened one other time in which both of the first round series were done on Sunday and we could discuss the matchups. But usually we get one decided and one not. And that was the case today. The Marines, let's go back to game one. That was on Saturday. Roki Sasaki rocks with a 2-0 victory over the Fighters up in Hokkaido. And I watched with Jason Koskri. We had the volume off because we were talking marriage and kids and moving and all kinds of great stuff. And I tried to introduce him to the concept of skipping commercial time to catch up with the live action, but he kept checking his phone to see what was going on before the game got there. I think he wanted to tweet about it. So anyway, Roki tosses a gem, 8 innings, no runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts, 112 pitches. And the thing that stood out for me, I'm just going to point out one thing in this game, was that they gave Naoya Masuda a boost or a kickstart for the 9th inning. They sent out a left-hander, Shota Suzuki, to get the left-handed hitting Kotaro Kiyomiya out. And then on came Masuda to get the save, and he did that. And just a couple solo home runs. And I wasn't sure. We talked about this a long time ago when I anticipated this matchup, saying that I didn't know who was going to start on the mound for the Fighters. Not sure I totally agree with everything that went down, even with today's game. And I'm not sure what's going on tomorrow with Koki Kitayama starting this game. And they brought in Sachiya Yamasaki to pitch in relief today. And he gets the win because they won in extra innings. But anyway, this game one, I thought there were a few opportunities for the Fighters to make things happen, but the circumstances just weren't right for them. They didn't have the right batter at the plate, or they didn't have the right runner with enough speed on there. So they played it straight and they didn't produce and they got shut out.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, the fighters actually, you know, they have a wealth of pitching, and I'll tell you, I do like Shoma Kanemura. He's really impressed me. Koki Kitayama has some of the best pitches I've seen this side of Shunpei Yamashita. Really, he's your typical young Japanese pitcher, and you see how when you see him on a good day, and you see how good his stuff can be, you wonder why he ever loses a game, and then you see the next game and you go, geez, what happened to that pitch? It was really good last week. So the inconsistency is a major part of young Japanese pitchers. I don't know about other countries' young pitchers, but I see that. But I like his stuff. Kitayama, former closer, I like his stuff. And I'm guessing, Hiromi Ito got basically, he got slammed in his last game, I think. So I don't know what's up with that, but I'm guessing what?
Yeah, really? I don't remember him getting slammed. I just remember him not winning, but I thought it was he pitched really long into deep into the game, and then they just didn't win. But I'll look it up. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's look then.
Yeah, it was he'd only 7 innings. He gave up 2 runs,
okay,
6 hits. I mean, you know, they just
didn't win. So yeah. I guess they're going to keep him. I mean, this is probably the plan. It looks like the Fighters actually have a plan. In that,
tell me what you think it is.
Well, I think it is. I mean, we saw a little bit of that. They had Sachi Yamasaki in reserve, and they brought him out when they needed him, but he only pitched a couple innings, so no problem, or an inning, and so that was good. And then so he's basically ready to go. And if they win, he's ready to go in the second stage, which is a problem that most teams really have. Teams that get through the first stage of the climax series, then they go into the second stage and they're a little short.
Yeah, but I mean, he threw 3 innings today and 42 pitches. So I don't know.
Yeah, but he would be good for game 2. For
bullpen, yeah.
Yeah, I think he could go for game 2 even.
You mean
if
start.
They wanted him to? Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, so that was interesting, and of course, I like when they came out. They were, you know, they switched catchers, but of course, Torai Fushimi had been catching them for years with Oryx before he became a Fighter. So that was interesting. No, so I think they're pretty much where they want to be right now. So anyway, so I'm already skipping ahead to game 2, which
you are. So let's jump into it. Today's game on Sunday ended 3-2 in 10 innings. Chusei Manami cracks a score-tying solo shot in the 9th inning with 1 out, and then Daiki Asama laces a walk-off RBI single to right to win it in the next inning off of Hirokazu Sawamura.
I know, and I'm
wadi thinking, wadi, what?
Well, I mean, you know, and I'm looking at that at bat, and I'm going, first pitch, straight fastball right down the middle of the plate. He looks at it for strike 1, and then he swings at a pitch that it was like above the letters, you know, it's like it's almost shoulder high.
I disagree with that, but it was up in the zone.
It was out of the zone. It was up. It was.
No, I don't agree with that. No,
okay, you need to look at it again.
I'm looking it up now as we speak, but I don't think it was shoulder high. I'm not buying that. Sorry, but yeah, it was. I mean, it was not a good pitch. It was certainly not a pitch. Not the pitch that, or not the location Masuda wanted to throw it, and it certainly wasn't.
Well, Masuda didn't throw it, so Sawamura threw it.
Oh, you're talking about Asama?
Yes.
Oh, well, you didn't say that. I thought you were talking about Manami. All right.
Well, you mentioned Asama, and I was talking about
it. I mentioned both of them.
Yeah, but Asama was.
You didn't
second.
Say anybody's name. I didn't know what you're talking about.
Well, the one you were immediately referencing.
Okay, all right. Well, then you could put some names in there so people can follow. All right. Okay, yeah. Probably a pitch up. I don't remember what it looked like. I just remember the game was over.
It was way up there. I mean, it wasn't like the Vladimir Ballantyne 56th home run up there, but it was pretty high. It was definitely a ball. It was about a couple of balls above the strike, a few balls above the strike zone. And I'm going, that's the pitch you're swinging at.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to credit the fighters because they put on a, you know, one of those fight backs that it was epic because their backs were against the wall, right? They had to win the game or at least tie.
Now all they need to do is tie.
Yeah, but I give them the credit. But I'm just thinking, these are the pitchers you're throwing out there with a chance to end this thing. They felt a little bit nervy about Masuda the first day because they gave him a boost. And then today they didn't, but he's pitching back-to-back days. And I just and then you bring in Sawamura. I mean, I'm thinking I want to end this thing. And even with two outs, if two outs and he walks a guy, I'm pulling him. I'm nervous. I'm the edgy manager. I'm quick trigger. And I don't like two out walks. And I don't like leadoff walks either. But I don't like the two out.
Which walks do you like?
The walks that when you're pitching to somebody who can kill you walks. Let somebody else who can't is not necessarily going to kill you. He's going to paper cut you. Pitch to those guys. Don't pitch to the guys you're going to bash your head in. So I just didn't agree with that. But I can't. I mean, who are they going to bring in? Right is the question.
Shota Suzuki was really the guy they wanted late in the inning, and they'd already used him.
Yeah. So that's that. So they end up losing the game.
It was the return of Hiroki Kokubo managing.
So yeah, that was it for me because. Obviously, Asama, a guy who had just—I like to say—he's a victim of a crowded house, right? Sometimes you got to sleep on the floor because there's just not enough room. Not
well,
enough beds.
He was a guy that the world by his—you know—he had the world baseball world was his oyster when he came up, but he couldn't stay healthy.
Couldn't stay healthy, and he couldn't produce enough either. Yeah,
well, he was
when he did get his opportunities. Yes,
right. Well, he had all the tools. And just never, you know, he wasn't in the right place at the right time. And then he got hurt just when it looked like he was breaking through. He got hurt and blah, 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 blah. And here he is. He's this like grizzled veteran's never done nothing.
Right, right. So, well, he has now. He has won a postseason game with a walk-off hit. And was he fired up? And that just injects so much juice into the fighters as if they don't have enough to win for. They're at home. They haven't really hit well. I was sitting there today thinking,
well, you should do more
when the game was still 2-0. It was just for a short time because I think it was a home run in the top of the inning,
seventh inning.
And then a run, the fighters put together a run in the bottom of that inning. But when they went up 2-0, I said, could this be back-to-back days in which the road team is going to win the series with 4 runs, all solo home runs, and the same score in both games. My mind started to wander, and then the fighters got a run. I said, okay, well, they can still win the game and win the series with 4 solo home runs being the only runs produced. And then Manami erased that notion. So,
I felt really bad for. Of course, the guy I felt really bad for was Kazuya Ojima because he gave up a bunch of hits, but they're all like they're rollers to shortstop. There's, it's like.
Well, you remember what Dennis Arfate said about infield hits to us? I think it was a long time ago. He called them. He said, not infield hits, but. What he said about ground ball singles, they're outs that got away.
Well, these weren't outs. They were not outs that got away because the only reason they were infield singles is because the shortstop was able to catch up with them. But it's like by the time he got the ball in shallow left field, there was no play to be made.
Yeah, that's what you say, but I'm telling you, any pitcher who gets a ball on the ground thinks it could be an out. If it doesn't turn into an out, it's one that got away.
Yeah,
so it doesn't change anything, even if they hit it hard.
That's true. Everything that leaves his hand supposed to be in the strike is a strike. So yeah, same difference.
Sort of. A swinging one or a called one, yes.
Whatever.
But
it's a strike.
Yeah, so it was a very, I think, emotional game for the fighters, and they might be able to ride some momentum. But then they have Kitayama throwing tomorrow. Now, you talk about his pitches. I just look for consistency. I look for guys who can, when I'm watching the game, if they're trying to go out of the zone and they successfully go out of the zone but still get swings, I like to see that. I like to watch guys, where the catcher sets up. I'm watching all these things. So if the catcher's setting up, if they throw opposite side and all that stuff. With Kitama, I've seen him. He's inconsistent in the games in which he has consistent results. I've watched him. I'm like, okay, you were very fortunate to get that out. Maybe you were so bad with the pitch location that the hitter actually guessed right, but you couldn't execute the pitch, so he was swinging at the wrong. He's trying to cover the outside of the plate when your ball backed up on you and ended up going on the inside. So anyway, I'm looking at him and I'm looking at Atsuki Taniichi of the Marines, and I'm thinking both of these guys are, like, for me, huge question marks. I don't know what to
Yeah,
expect.
2 years ago, Taniichi'd be like, watch, oh, we're
Yeah,
done.
this, yeah,
Series
this,
is over.
yeah, series is over,
Because
or you're going to get a good shutdown performance from
yeah,
him.
because 2 years ago, you knew he'd go like strike out 11 guys in 7 innings.
Right. And so it's just a
Now
question.
it's a
It's a
roll of the dice. I mean,
huge question mark for me. I'm wondering, I'm thinking Taniichi's just, he's been largely unreliable, right? He
yeah,
hasn't, he just
exactly.
hasn't been consistent. He
I
was in
think
the
he,
preseason.
yeah,
In the preseason, I think he was good. After that,
his splitter has basically been I don't know, played in hide and seek with him all year.
yeah. So I anticipate more traffic on the bases. I'm not sure if that leads to runs today when or Monday, today when you guys are listening, hopefully. But I don't know if it's going to lead to runs or not, but I expect to see more guys on the base and bases. And I think we're going to see a Reyes bomb tomorrow, a Franmil Reyes bomb, because he's just getting closer and closer. He just missed some pitches and could be ugly. Could be ugly for Taniichi. I don't know, but it'll
Well,
be a fun game.
I like the fighters coming in basically because I thought they had the three big hitters they had were are bigger than the two big hitters the Marines had.
And the Marines are
So
finding, they're finding power though from guys like,
they are.
Katsuya Kakunaka with a home run. I'm like, give me a break. This
I
is.
know, and he made a really good defensive play, and I'm going, whoa! I've seen it like twice this year. One of these, I'm going like, dude. Where'd that come from? Would you become 10 years older all of a sudden?
And the same could
10
be
years
said.
younger, excuse me, 10 years younger, because I'm going, wow, even when you were 10 years younger, your defense wasn't that good.
Yeah, and Hisanori Yasuda, he hits a
Yasuda?
home run, and he also had a really good defensive play. So, I mean, it looked like it was going to be like this destiny thing. But anyway, we've got to move to the Central League. Congratulations to the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. They
Right, they
sweep
won the
the CLCS. Yep.
Yeah, the CL pre-climax series.
So game one on Saturday, 3-1, the Bay Stars win, and that was Tyler Austin coming through with a couple of big runs late, and that really was the difference in the game after Katsuki Azuma, their ace, pitches a strong start, and he left after four scoreless innings with an injury, and they think it's a torn muscle or pulled muscle. I didn't hear
Ouch.
any reports today.
No, yeah, no, that was good.
They
That
think it was a
game
hamstring, yeah.
was really made by, I'm going to say it was Shugo Maki and Kei Tasano being on base all the time.
Yes.
And bam. And then Tyler Austin did the dirty work at the other end.
Yes, yeah. And but I found it odd in that game that early in the game, I think it was the first inning that the Bay Stars loaded the bases, and part of that loading of the bases was for the Hanshin Tigers to walk Tyler Austin. But then they decided to pitch to him later in the game with him having an opportunity to give the Bay Stars some separation, and he burned him. And I'm like, what's the difference between him coming up with runners on base in the first inning and him coming up with runners on base late in the game when it's one nothing? Don't you still need to get him or pitch around him or get him out or something? I mean, I didn't understand that move. I thought Akinobu Okada, who leaves this stint. I get the feeling he might be back, but somebody was saying in the office today, they said the exact same thing that we said, was that he looks older than his 66 years. He looks worn. And
Well, he
that
always did. I mean, he did ever since he lived a pretty hard life as a player, apparently.
yeah, you said that. And so I'm just wondering, I think he's young enough that he'll come back and he just needs a break. So we'll see about that. But I thought he managed this series like he really wanted to go, and that's like go off into the sunset right away, because he didn't seem to be making a lot of effort to get the Tigers through this thing, and they didn't seem to be helping him either.
I think, you know, the last time he quit the Tigers was when they failed to advance in the playoffs after two straight years, and he said, okay, I'm done with this. And this time, you know, last year was the first time I think he ever won a postseason series with the Tigers. And I thought, wow, he's really figured it out. And then he said, okay, well, that was a fluke. I'm just going to quit this year and, you know, and help the team out. They can start their managerial search before I quit after failing in the playoffs again.
Yeah,
he's a kind. He seems like a kind guy. So maybe that was it. He was thinking of other people.
Well, when I was a kid, I had a friend in elementary school with a speech impediment, and he couldn't say the word weird. He would always say, "That's weird," and that's what I was thinking today. It was just weird.
Okay.
And let's go to today's game. It ended up being a 10-3 Bay Stars mash bash party, and I said it the day before. In fact, I was sitting there with Jason yesterday as we were eating lunch, and I said, they're starting Haruto Takahashi in game two.
I actually liked that because they hadn't, I think they hadn't seen him this year.
So my point was going to be, if you lose today, because it was yesterday, he's pitching to keep your season going. Do you really, is that really what you want? And this was another thing that I was thinking.
Now that's more of a game one thing.
Right. I would if you're going to pitch him in game one, so you still have someone like Saiki, Hiroto Saiki, to come back in game two, somebody with some veteran experience. Anyway, I think what we saw today with the Tigers and the Bay Stars was a big difference between MLB and NPB. That if a pitcher allows four runs in the second inning here in an elimination game, he can still go out for the third inning. He can still go out for the fourth inning. He can even get some in the fifth inning. I would have yanked that dude in the second inning when he was giving up all those runs. So I don't, I mean, the thought in Major League Baseball is if in an elimination game, if somebody's having any kind of trouble, like they're getting the outs, but they're not doing it in a sturdy, settling way, they're making mistakes all over the place. People are hitting rockets, but the defense is catching them, and whatever's happening. I think I saw that game today with the Cleveland Guardians and the Detroit Tigers, that the Cleveland starter was pitching okay, but he was wobbly, and they just said, you know, bye. They took him out because it's an elimination game. I don't know how they could send Takahashi back out there for the third, fourth, and fifth innings after he had given up four runs in an inning. That's part of what I mean by Okada managing to go home and, you know, get his fishing pole or whatever it is he does in his leisure time, because I didn't get that.
Well, then Shoki Murakami showed us why they didn't start him.
#HiHeat.
The reigning MVP, yes. Well, good. I mean, yeah. I didn't get it.
I don't know. I was happy to see Mike Ford come back, because we haven't heard from him since he hit his first home run.
That's right. A Ford drive.
That's right.
Yeah. It was a fun game for the Bay Stars. It had to be, except that now. So we already said that Azuma went down on Saturday with probably a hamstring injury. Then the Bay Stars also lost one of their best hitters in Toshiro Miyazaki, who was carried off the field piggyback style. So he was coming out of the batter's box, and I've been there before. I had a torn muscle. So that's what I predicted in the office, that it was a torn something, but I don't know what I haven't seen reports. I'm looking now as we speak, but I don't see anything in particular, but I didn't think that was good news for him. So they might be minus their best pitcher and one of their best hitters going up against Los Gigantes in the second round here. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough haul.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about those matchups. So we've probably got, I'm going to, you know, I think I said I really liked the Marines going into this series because I thought Dallas Keuchel was going to be on the mound. And after they lost Keuchel, I thought better of it. And I think the Fighters will move through as well. And
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the Fighters versus the Hawks. I don't think the Hawks are going to match them with great pitching, but we've just seen how resourceful and how industrious the Hawks can be in terms of playing defense, scoring runs, and getting the outs they need on the mound. So I'm going to predict that they're going to go through to the Japan series as well.
Yeah, the Hawks are I broke down the two leagues this year for the day job, and the Hawks primarily were, you know, deep all around. I mean, their offense was amazing. Their offense was head and shoulders above the rest of Japan, but their defense was as good as anybody's. And the pitching was pretty darn good. So, I mean, they have weaker, I wouldn't say they have weaknesses. I would say they have weaker areas in the pitching staff. They have some unreliability issues. I mean, they've got them. Everybody's got them. They've got fewer of them than everybody else. But yeah, they can be had, but yeah, it's going to be a tough job. They're very deep. They're very talented. They've got Yuki and Nagita back. They're going to be tough.
Okay. So, and then with the Giants and the Bay Stars, I mean, just because they've lost so much. I mean, Michael Westbay, who was also delighted to see his team go through, was also lamenting that Yudai Yamamoto, the catcher, starting catcher, who had been so good all season, was gone. And I liked Yasutaka Tobashira. He had a big bases clearing double today and really got the main hit that put the Bay Stars up early. And he's a good veteran catcher. He's just different. I don't think he's certainly different with the bat. But as far as what they really need him to do is call a good game and block pitches. And I think he's going to be able to do that part. They're just not going to have that offense. But I like him as a hitter. He's a credible hitter. So if he gets up there and in certain situations, he still can be dangerous. So it'll be fun. But I just can't see how they're going to get through the Giants. And
it's interesting that you said that because, you know, his rookie year, they went to the Japan series and he was a big deal. His defense was, you know, everybody was raving about his defense. And I talked to the Bay Stars people at the winter meetings and they're all going, you know what? We really didn't rate his defense. We got him because of his bat.
Which is interesting because he wasn't really a great hitter. I mean,
they liked his offensive potential. That was the big thing about him. He was going to, and they were hoping the defense would work. And it's been kind of weird. He's had good offensive years and good defensive years, but except they never seem to be in the same year.
Right. Well, good luck. Like I said, I think the Giants are going to go through this series, and we're going to have a Hawks-Giants showdown, and we'll talk about that when we get the matchup. Okay, let's make a two-seam transition. I've never really seen a week like this. So normally when we have managers, I put musical managers because the music started and we just had managers moving all over the place, and it just seemed like, I know it's not five, but every day there was a new manager move happening. Like one guy got hired, he was going to have a press conference, and then the next day when he was supposed to have his press conference, someone else lost their head. Sure. And so I sent a message to Jim and I said, let's talk about the new managers and the guys who got hired. And we had some guys who were expected, some guys who were unexpected, and then all of a sudden I look up one day and I see Toshiaki Imai of Rakuten. He got replaced out of nowhere. And I'm like, what is going on? So I said to Jim and Mess, I said, how many effing new managers do we have?
Yeah, Imai was interesting because in the day job, I saw some notes and story drafts in Japanese that was saying he was, you know, announcing that he was leaving. And so when the Eagles played their last game, I was half expecting another Tadahito Iguchi moment.
In that?
You know, where he tells the team, it's like he doesn't want to come back. And so he doesn't tell the team he doesn't want to come back until he announces it. You know, he took control, like Tadahito Iguchi took control of a situation by telling everybody before he told the team, which is that was the Tatsunori Hara thing when he stayed in his job because he knew the team wouldn't fire him if they if he released to the media that he would be happy to stay on.
Right, right.
So I expected Imai almost to do that. And then when the game was over, they said, well, we're considering a change. Well, it didn't, obviously, it didn't take, there wasn't a lot of consideration. And and the interesting thing was, you know, when Oryx is, and I think Oryx had wanted Satoshi Nakajima to stay on. Mm-hmm. He's like, dude, you won three pennants in 4 years. Don't be so hard on yourself. You know, they're like, we want you back. And he's gone, no, I'm good.
Yeah, these guys are not listening to me. I'm out.
I watched this ship sink all over the place. I had to watch it every day. You guys didn't. You could have stayed in your office and not watched.
All right. Well, so
anyway, so the last point is, I was thinking, and when they announced his replacement, I thought, that's interesting. I had to look up, who is this guy? And I thought the last time I had to do that was when Rakuten named Hajime Miki as their manager a few years ago.
And he's the new manager.
And he's
now.
Back.
Yeah, he's back. So let's go through that. Normally, we would like to go through all the managerial changes like Jim sort of just did. And we talk about each one. But there's such a cluster of managerial changes that we're going to have to stick a pin in this and come back to it on a later show. But let's go through what we know so far. And by the time we get back, there could be another head that's rolling down a hill somewhere. But
there's one more that's undecided.
Which we'll get to in our question if we get to that tonight, which we have to do. So let's move it. So we've got Satoshi Nakajima out at Oryx. In comes Mamoru Kishida, the former closer. And apparently he's the first pitcher to be a manager of the Oryx Buffaloes. So that's not the Kintetsu Buffaloes or the Oryx Blue Wave. It's the first pitcher, former pitcher as a manager at Oryx. Then we have former pitcher Fumiya Nishiguchi taking over in Saitama with the Seibu Lions for Hisanobu Watanabe, who left. And we also had
announced, who's leaving as general manager.
Yeah, he's leaving the organization, yes. And then we knew that Kazuyoshi Tatsumi was out with Chunichi, and it was Kazuki Inoue who took over and had some bold words in his press conference about how he's going to be turning the team around. So we'll look for that to happen. Where are we? I'm getting lost. we got Akinobu Okada, we talked about, out at Hanshin and taking over from him, a guy that I affectionately call Fuji-Q, not Highland, but Kyuji Fujikawa. He also, my other nickname for him is the Gopher, because he's got this chubby, he's got these chubby cheeks, looks like he's got nuts
gopher
in him. And
for a little bit,
The Gopher, yeah. So he's taking over for the Hanshin Tigers. What number are we on? I'm
that's
lost.
Four.
Yeah, I know. I've got the four fingers up, but I can't find the fifth guy.
Well, that would be
Imai. Yeah, Imai. So Hajime Miki taking over at Rakuten.
And the guy on the watch list is Tsuyoshi Shinjo, who's at the end of a 2-year contract. And so I think it's going to be up to him.
Yes. But we all know, because we've heard that Atsunori Inaba is supposed to take over. Now, for me, it's not really that he's like a player or something that he's going to rot on the vine or anything. If he doesn't become manager soon, they can let him simmer a little bit in a cushy job. But
well, he's the farm manager now.
Yeah. So, well, okay. Yeah, he's no longer sitting up in the rafters and just kicking back and watching the games. He's doing his homework after they play games in the daytime, but he still can go to the park if he wants to, right? Or no, I guess it's kind of far. Anyway, so like I said, we'll stick a pin in that and we'll talk about the moves on the bench next week or the week after or sometime before the year is out, because there's just too many. Just too many.
So now I heard the Fighters are going to move their minor league team to Hokkaido.
Okay, that would make sense.
I don't know what they spent most of their Darvish money on fixing up Kamagaya, so I don't know what they're going to do with that. Maybe sell it to the Swallows or something.
Oh gosh. All right, so that's it. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so our buddy Dave in Baltimore sent us an email this at the beginning of the week, I believe it was, and he said, quick question, do you guys think Tsuyoshi Shinjo will return as Fighters manager next year? My feeling when he was hired was that he was just a placeholder until Atsunori Inaba takes over, and I haven't seen anything to make me change my mind, despite the Fighters making the playoffs. Pretty sure Shinjo's contract expires after this season, and Inaba spent this year as the farm team manager. Thanks, Dave. Jim.
Well, yeah, good question. I don't think they're going to fire Shinjo. I think it's going to be up to him. They might discuss, do you want to stay for 1 year or 2 years? And my guess is Shinjo might say, okay, give me a 1 year contract. I'm enjoying this too much. But I think the Fighters are happy with the way things are going. And I don't think there's going to be any urge for them to push him out the door. Shinjo is not, I think, the long-term solution. I think he's the guy you want to let the talent that a normal by-the-book manager would overlook, let it percolate up. And I think he's pretty much done that already. So I think his usefulness to the team is about ending. But it might take a bad season. I think that is the case. He's done what he could do, and I don't think he's going to be able to do a lot more. And I think it's probably going to be up to a more conventional manager after this. So, but I think that's my take. I don't know Shinjo from Adam, but he is he's much deeper than his persona.
Yes. I agree with that. Well, I think he stays at least another year.
I think he will too.
Obviously, I could be wrong, but he matured this year. He acted like a manager. He was a responsible figure outside the clubhouse because that's all we could see. So I don't know about inside the clubhouse, but you talked to Cody Ponce this year and he said, next question. And that has always stuck with me, that one.
Well, that was Shinjo. That was Shinjo, 1.1 and 1.2.
I know, and which is my point. He has matured. He's a different guy. But that was Cody Ponce's response to the question about Shinjo, and so that has stuck with me. And so, again, Shinjo skipped out on some media availability at times this season, but he was there. He was talking. He's still wearing that stupid mask. Take it off. Take it off. But the team won. And I think that team can challenge the Hawks for the Japan series, the right to go to the Japan series, if obviously the Fighters get through on Monday. But some of the times they have three former catchers, as we talked about, playing other positions and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how much
tradition.
I don't know how much of those decisions really belong to him. That if the front office just said, well, look, you can play these guys in other spots, just get them on the field. We like the bats. Or how much he made that. He went to the front office and said, you know what? I know we're going to play these guys out of position, but I like the bats. I don't know how that went, but however it went, he managed the whole situation and got a lot of these guys playing time, including we saw Ariel Martinez come off the bench today, get a hit, contribute, even though he didn't play yesterday or he wasn't starting yesterday. I mean, he has been able to manage all the egos and all the players and get them to produce. He has Azuma ready to play and hit and win a game for them in the playoff game when their backs are up against the wall. Now, I'm not going to give Shinjo all the credit for that, but he put the player in, the player produced. So I'm going to say he pushed the right button at least. So I just like what he has done. And I don't think this season, had he continued on in the same vein as the first two seasons, I would say get in the heck out of there.
Well, that was the point. I think that was what everybody expected. We've seen Shinjo's show and it's getting old. But I like what you said about, managing the egos. But I think he does that automatically because everybody who comes in says, man, I thought I had an ego.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's starting with his own.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really have one.
He's starting with his own.
Look at this guy.
Yeah, you're my ego. My poor little ego is getting dwarfed in here.
Yeah, so I guess I just better go without one.
Yeah. So, like I said before, Inaba's not a player. He's not going to rot out there if he stays another couple seasons managing on the farm or whatever they want to do with him. He'll be fine if he's the guy who they think can really lead them into success. But I tell you this, if Shinjo gets him to the Japan series this season, then he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think it's 100% up to him for next year. And what they plan to do for 2 years, I don't know.
All right,
I would definitely offer him a one-year contract. It's in bad form to take a guy who's a real success and push him out, shove him out the door. It's a bad look. As much as it was a bad look when they hired him in the first place.
In a press conference that I'm sure he had a little bit of medicinal assistance to bouncing all over the world.
He gave us the full-blown Shinjo. This is what I'm saying, and then what I'm not saying is what I really mean.
Man, he was like Towley.
I want to ask him. It's like, how's that plan to have four of your pitchers be television celebrities? How that was an important part of the plan for the fighter's success. How that part's going?
All right. Well, let's see if they can get into the second stage of the playoffs. That's going to be an exciting game today. Thank you very much, Dave, for the question. We appreciate it. Anyone else that has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on X.com with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your postseason.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.